Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is, When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
In rural Swaziland, communities without electricity now have the means to preserve vaccines and medicines that were previously unavailable to them. Viewer's Caroline Turner has more.
A refrigerator powered directly from a solar panel means drugs and even HIV testing kits can now be stored at the correct temperature in Swaziland villages without reliable electricity. The solar fridge is making an immediate impact in the country with the world's highest rate of HIV infection. The fridge was developed as part of the Solar Chill Initiative, an international campaign which helps deliver vaccines and refrigeration to parts of the world without reliable electricity. A group called the Fridge Factory in Swaziland developed a simple and environmentally friendly way of running a solar-powered refrigerator without using a storage battery. The system uses solar power to make ice while the sun shines, which then keeps the fridge cool overnight. Freezing water packs have the added advantage of being easy to maintain, according to Roy Singh, the company's technical director.
If you have a problem with water or if there is a breakage in one of the packs, we just go to the nearest river, fill it up and carry on.
The Fridge Factory solar refrigerators are now in use in some of Swaziland's most remote rural communities where electricity is unreliable. Nationally, 30% of the population of Swaziland is HIV positive, but in Nasoko, the number is 80%. Dr. Wisdom Chivia says the solar refrigerator means he can now keep HIV testing kits at his clinic in southern Swaziland where they are most needed.
If we don't have a proper storage of those drugs and vaccines, we cannot keep them. So they couldn't receive them and we were referring them to go to other areas. But now because we have this refrigerator, we are keeping those things, then it's reliable.
The fridge factory does not use the chlorofluorocarbons that are known to deplete the ozone. It's converted its entire production to use environmentally friendly hydrocarbons instead. The company says the market for their fridge is growing fast as people realize the benefits. Carolyn Turner, VO.
Nah, see, that ain't the way it works, yo. It ain't. Because, like, I'm the one out here all day taking a chance, right? I'm saying, police roll up into this bitch and ain't gonna be you to catch no charge. See, leastwise, the thing you need to do, lay all that good shit down on an even split, yo. Come Friday, me and my niggas done sold all that shit off, come pass and get paid. That's where I'm at with it.
Hey, Frog. Come here. Nah, serious. Come here. First of all, and I don't know how to tell you this without hurting you deeply. First of all, you happen to be white. I'm talking raised on Rapola Street white, where your mama used to drag you down to St. Casimir's just like all the other little piss pants on the block. Second, I'm also white. Not hang on the corner, don't give a fuck white, but Locust Point, IBS, Local 47 white. I don't work without no fucking contract. And I don't stand around listening to horseshit excuses like my cousin Ziggy, who, by the way, is still owed money by you and all your down streetwise wiggers. You go in your pocket, come up with $500 in advance and the $210 that you owe to Zig. You can work my package.
I'm saying, this is the shit you had out here last week. The dimes and Moochie was slinging. Shit was good. Moochie sold out quick. Alright. I'm saying, I'm gonna send my man around with the dollars. Keep it real, y'all.
Whatever. Yo.
Better watch the man. bud. Come over here, brother, let me tell you something. You think we're talking too loud?
Hush that fuss.
I ain't got no dust. I don't have to take it on the land.
Watch that man.
Huh?
Watch that man.
Watch them. Yeah, all right. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Coming from some funny places. What you say, bro?
What's happening? Wow.
Trying to get down.
Yeah.
Well, you know, look at him. We can't have that.
That's right. Right on. Yeah.
Ain't no alcohol. Man, I don't dig it. What you say, Jeton?
Hey, don't be so mean.
You know I'm clean now.
Yeah. And on the sea.
Excuse me, cap while I rap.
I want to tell you about the first time I was 21 years old and I saw $6 million of cash right in front of me. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's what $6 million looks like. Insane. How the hell can I get this kind of money one day? And the guy who had the $6 million was a Jewish businessman who owned dealerships in San Fernando Valley area. And he gave me an advice at 21 that completely changed the way I do business till today. By the way, if you get value from today's message, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Here's what this Jewish businessman told me. I said, how is it possible you got this much money and you're in your mid-30s, $6 million cash? He says, Patrick, there's one thing you need to know about Jews. I said, what's that? When one makes money, five make money. I said, what? He says, when one of us makes money in a business, five other Jews make money because we like to make money in groups. I said, so what's the benefit of that? He said, everybody keeps doing business together. He says, too many people, ethnicities, nationalities, cultures, backgrounds, they just want to be the one making money. They don't want anybody else around them making money. And then eventually they wonder, how come nobody wants to go into business with me? Because when you make money, nobody else makes money. So ask yourself the question. Number one, the person you're working for, does he make money and do you make money? And number two, the people that work with you, who report to you, if they give their best, do they also make good money the way you're making money? If the answer is yes, you're in a great place. Go do your part, and eventually you'll make your money like that Jewish mentor shared with this 21-year-old 24 years ago, 23 years ago. If you got value from this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. And if you've never watched the video, 20 Rules of Money, How Actually Money Works, click here to watch the video, 20 Rules of Money. Take care, everybody.
Eatonville, Florida is a quiet oasis 6 miles north of Orlando. More than 130 years old, this historic town stands as a civic and cultural touchstone for African Americans across the country.
It was not the first Negro community in America, but it was the first to be incorporated, the first attempt at organized self-government on the part of Negroes in America.
But for all there is to celebrate, the city's 2,200 residents have long struggled with poverty, unemployment, and a rate of diabetes 3 times the national average. Today, community leaders are banding together to build a culture of health upon Eatonville's strong foundation by embracing its history and building its future through creating jobs, improving educational outcomes, and empowering residents.
Eatonville is a quintessential American town. It has its own special uniqueness in terms of character and spirit.
There's this sense of family throughout that everybody is your extended mother, your extended father, your extended grandmother.
The community has reduced crime. It has brought in new businesses and new stores. It's changed so much that you can see it in the people's hearts, in their actions, in the way that they live.
Good afternoon. I'm Jasmine Reese, the neighborhood coordinator for the historic town of Eatonville.
Every day, there are people that come to Eatonville. I tell them, you have just walked in the city limits of history.
I enjoy educating people and exposing them to my home and to what took place in the past and what's happening now, all of the development, the changes in government, it's inspiring.
I am the executive director of the Association to Preserve Beatonville Community, Incorporated. We are what is identified as a cultural tourism heritage success story. Eatonville is known really around the world as a literary destination because of Zora Neale Hurston, the 20th century folklorist, anthropologist, and writer, because she comes out of this community and celebrates this community. When people know who they are, they know of their history, how they fit into that history, it allows for a kind of security, a kind of emotional stability.
To me, it means pride in who you are and where you're going and where you want to be in life and what you want to do.
It's important that we keep telling the story, because if you stop telling the story, people can't dream anymore.
The culture of health is a 360 approach if you're going to truly have a healthy community. It's not just about medicine. It is about your spiritual environment. It is about economics.
It's important for businesses to partner with community, because any town's progression and growth is really economic development.
Hostdine is a store of information that goes across the world. And they decided that Eatonville was going to be their home.
There's going to be a lot of non-technical jobs available, so we want to open up job opportunity to the town of Eatonville.
One of the neat things about it, every home in Eatonville will have free Wi-Fi. So I think it's going to be a win-win for our community and our economic base to have these new businesses that are starting to come in.
The Wayne Dinh Center has provided transitional and supportive housing for homeless individuals and people with disabilities, with supportive services behind the scenes to support people's growth.
Didn't have a job and I didn't have no income, but Ms. Carol trusted me and let me in here anyway. She gave me a place where nobody else would, you know. People don't do that every day.
We formed a partnership with Florida Hospital and Ability Housing, and the community and Orange County have invested in rehabbing our entire property. We've established a new lifeline here in Eatonville, able to provide affordable housing at reasonable costs based on income to help people get their first home, their first housing in the community.
When I found out that I had diabetes, I reached out to the American Diabetes Association and I said, I think there's a problem with diabetes in my town. They sent UCF here. They did a study where they went door to door and they talked to a lot of people and found out that there was almost 25% diabetes within the community, and that was unbelievable. Together, we decided something needed to be done.
Healthy Eatonville Place is a health and wellness community here in Eatonville, Florida. We provide diabetic classes, and we are teaching them about how to prevent diabetes and how to manage their diabetes by checking their blood sugars, what foods they should eat. We've already pulled data that shows that 97% of the participants have reduced the pre-diabetes, and they have not advanced to diabetic.
If you can't pronounce it, you don't need to eat it. They are learning how to read labels and understanding ingredients. No one has ever taught them to look at ingredients.
Sirsaf for 1 can calories.
Okay, what's
140.
While teaching people how to eat appropriately, we found Eatonville is the food desert. And in the food desert, there are no grocery stores within our local area. So Ebony Nutrition has a fresh bus that brings fresh vegetables and fruits into the town that people can receive.
We are introducing our community to fresh produce, along with changing the lives of people at risk.
I got turnips, I got green pepper, and avocado and ginger.
People have made a choice to make a difference. We're all working as one on how we can improve the health in the town.
Everything about our town kind of reflects on making sure a kid is nurtured all the way up to adulthood. Valencia is one of the best things since apple pie when their program came in our community saying there's so much construction work need to be done in Central Florida. Even if a kid had a past challenge in their life, we'll go past it, look at their abilities to learn a trade, and we will make things happen. Calvin is a young man that just needed a chance. That's all he needed was one chance.
The mayor encouraged me to come and do this program to set an example for the younger kids out in Eanyville, just to give them hope, give them something to look forward to, let the kids know that anything is possible. I'm ready to go in and be a manager, supervisor, superintendent, just going to work my way up.
Leadership Eatonville found people who had some untapped skills, showed them the way to organize those skills, and we show them that they can even do more.
What opportunities do you have for growth in Eatonville?
The goal is to talk to the community about what they want and implement those things.
And we're excited about what they are doing.
Hungerford Elementary School is a small community school with about 300 students. At one time, they thought about closing it down, but everyone fought to keep this school here.
And that is the greatest thing that could ever happen because it's the foundation for our kids. So we're able to plant those seeds to say you are important.
We're here to make sure that this community of students will be successful. We want every student to achieve academically. I want them to become the teachers. I want them to become the doctors, the lawyers, and maybe even one day the president. I want them to have those goals. So I think it's very important that the science, engineering, mathematics, technology is built into their curriculum. Hungerford is such an important part of Eatonville because we're here to teach the students to be leaders.
And here we are, what?
Leaders!
What?
Leaders!
How to look at someone in the eyes when they're shaking hands, what to say, how to be respectful to one another. And those are the skills that they will carry on throughout the year and on to their entire careers.
I mentor kids. They need me today, and I need them tomorrow. Because I understand that if I work with them now, the outcome measures of me working with them will be great. And it's so important that they are successful.
We're definitely planting the seeds for the future, and they're just growing.
I am very optimistic about the future of Eatonville, even with the challenges that we've had in our community. Economic development, diabetes, and education, we are addressing every issue, every concern, every challenge in Eatonville so that we can sit back one day and say, we did a pretty good job working together as a community. We're in good hands.
We are all in consensus in wanting to improve the health of the town. We're on our way. We're definitely on our way.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking? This man has no arms. Yeah. How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
People in the stands, I mean, that's just like what's entertainment for me now, you know? I like that Jimmy the Greek moment that happens in sports, you know? Like once every 4 or 5 years, you know that? Like some 50, 55-year-old white dude tries to explain why black people are kicking the shit out of white people in practically every major sport, you know? And it always goes down the same way, right? There's always like three white dudes, and the one white dude in the middle, he's always like the guy with like the theory. You know, he's always, you know, it seems these African-American athletes, they seem to have this quick twitch muscle fiber. You know, there's a slow twitch, and there's this quick twitch. And the second the dude says that, like the other two white dudes start like sliding out of frame, like, okay, this guy's getting fired, and I'm not going to be part of this highlight. Nice knowing you, Ned. Keep that seat warm, right? And the dude in the middle, he's just like hell-bent on getting fired, you know? He starts like bringing up slavery. And evidently, they were breeding the strongest man with the strongest woman in that quick twitch. And literally, 20 minutes later, that dude's on TV. He's like fired, right? He's crying. His family's standing there. He's got like a box of shit from his desk with like an Emmy sticking out. He's like, I don't know what I said. I was just talking about the quick twitch and the slow twitch. And I wasn't just trying to make a point. No, I love that. I love seeing people mess up their careers like that. It's just funny to me. Plus, I gotta admit, as a white dude, on some level, I have to believe in that theory because it's like, are white dudes that bad at basketball? I can't even watch the NBA anymore, man. It's like every highlight, the white dude's like that, the black dude has like his nuts in his face. Fucking slap! I'm just sitting at home like, for the love of God, tackle the guy. Jesus Christ, get out of the way. Do you ever get tired of those two nuts flying over your head? You know you're going to be on SportsCenter. Just get out of the way. Dude, I'm telling you, there's got to be something to that theory. I saw this show one time on Runaway Slaves. It was one of the most amazing programs I've ever seen in my life. Dude, when you ran away as a slave, you just didn't run to the end of the driveway and be like, fuck that job. Just start walking down the street. Dude, you had to, like, run through whole states. There's dogs chasing you. You're hurdling shit. You're swimming. Those were the first fucking triathletes. And there was nobody helping him out. There was no dude on the side of the road like, come on, man, two more states, you're in Ohio. Suck it up, you're looking good, looking good. Yeah, you were on your own. Is it any wonder? 250, 300 years of that shit, and then I'm going to D you up in gym class? It ain't happening. I come from hundreds of years of alcoholics. I got like half a liver, you know what I mean? It's just... You know what's funny to me about that stuff? You can't even like, you know, I obviously know that theory's crazy, but it's just like you can't even bring up how well black people are doing in sports. Everybody gets all weird about it, which I don't understand because it's like a compliment, you know? Like feel how weird it is right now. You know, I just brought that shit up. I'm saying something good, right? I saw a coach get in trouble for that shit, like... His team was like 0-6 or something. They just couldn't win. And every week the press was just getting on him more and more and more, right? And the dude, he was just like flustered. And he had like a moment of honesty. They were like, why can't you guys win a game? He's like, the offense isn't getting it done. You know, defense, you know, too slow. And it just run out. Tell me, we got to get some more black guys in this team. Because I'm telling you, it's just not. And immediately everybody's like, what? Everyone started freaking out. Like they had no idea what this dude was talking about. It's like, are you watching SportsCenter? Or do you see the Olympics? Like, I love the 100-meter dash, right? There's always like nine black dudes and that one token white guy in, like, lane 8. And I'm just sitting there going, come on, man, one time. Just one time, just win the bronze, just do what you got to do. And the white dude always stays with him until, like, the first turn, then he, like, fucking blows out his hammy. Those other eight black dudes are like... Where's that white dude the next Olympics? He's, like, up in the broadcast booth, his career's over. He's like a commentator. Yeah, it's going to be a great race. Still can't feel my fucking toes, but I'm telling you. No, I don't get it. It's like a compliment. We're saying you're fast. That's a good thing, right? People start all freaking out. Oh, you're acting like that's all we can do. You're saying we can't be scientists. No, we're not. All we're saying is if there was a race through the microscopes, you fuckers would win. We're just saying that you're fast. You get there first. Your lab coat would be flapping in the wind. I'd get there like 3 minutes later all cramped up. Are you looking at bacteria? No, you go first. You just go first. Jesus Christ. It was a Volvo. The guy ran by a Volvo in street shoes. I've never seen that before in my life. No, I get into those arguments all the time. All the time. Friends of mine will be like, well, how come anytime a black athlete does something, they say it's an athletic move? Anytime a white athlete does it, they say it's an intelligent move. And it's like, well, fair enough, man. It just depends on what you're doing. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, if you read a defense, white or black, that's an intelligent move, right? But if you take off from the foul line, jump over nine other dudes, and throw the shit down, those other nine guys aren't standing there like, fuck, why didn't I think of that shit? Here I am dribbling around, guys. I said, that's some superhero shit. You have like a cape flapping in the wind with a big S on your chest. I'm telling you, man, that's the funny thing about Hitler. Just let me finish. Let me work my way through this idea. No, that's my favorite sports clip is that Jesse Owens shit. I just love it because their whole angle was fucked up. He made Hitler leave in like the third quarter, right? He's putting down his number one finger, just fucking walking out of the stadium. Jesus Christ. Their whole thing was like, we are going to create a superior race. It's like, dude, I think we accidentally already did that. Yeah, we sent a select group of people to the gym every day for a couple hundred years. It's paying dividends. They're fucking dunking on us every day. Dude, how quiet was that limo ride home with Hitler? You know what I'm saying? You know he was talking crazy shit when they were on the way there. They were all amped up. We are going to dominate the Heil. Just going off. That whole ride home, they're just sitting there all quiet. You're sitting next to an even angrier than usual Adolf Hitler, trying to make some sort of small talk like, hey, it is a nice day, isn't it? You know, it's a nice boot.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks,
okay, today, we got a guest calling in tomorrow, special guest, so I don't want to let the cat out of the bag for that, but it'll be a historical guest, I guess. Today, our podcast was inspired by a friend of mine. We were having a conversation last night, and he came up with the term fake estate. This is in regards to real estate because most people don't really know what real estate is. And then when they find out, they can be disappointed. So some of the topics that we'll cover in the program notes right on Blog Talk Radio, real estate versus housing, there's a distinction between the two, equity versus cash flow, real owners don't need permits, examples of real housing, privately owned housing versus real estate. What is a deed? What does it mean when you have a deed? Fake estate versus real privately owned housing, Amish, Mennonite, and Hutterites. Many people have heard of the Amish and the Mennonites, but a lot of people haven't heard of the Hutterites. Best house owner skill sets. Homeowners, geography, mindsets, consumer, versus 100% private owner. So let's start with real estate versus housing. Real estate and housing are two different things. Although with a piece of real estate, you can have housing on it. Let me break it down this way. Real estate is really composed of two parts. Land, which is typically controlled by a local taxing authority. And once you put their definition of what a house is, and let's say one of the barometers that they might judge a house is would be square footage. Different taxing authorities around, local taxing authorities around the United States, they, for to meet their definition of what a house is, it has to meet a minimum square footage. Now, there's some other things included, depending on the jurisdiction, but the baseline is they must have a particularly set square footage. Like, I have land where if I decide to build what that particular local taxing authority defines as a legal house in that county, or at least in that particular part of the county, based on the zoning of this particular parcel of land, the bare minimum to legally be called a house, it has to have be 480 square feet. That's the minimum. If you want to build the structure as they define it, that's one of the parameters for a house. Now, in other places, the minimum square footage to be a legal house, H-O-U-S-T, house is a regulated word, it might be 1,000 square feet or 1,200 square feet or 1,700 square feet. So you need to check. If you want to build a house in any particular jurisdiction, you need to find out what is the one of the parameters, is not the only one, is what's the minimum square footage for this to be called a house. Now, let's say I decide to build a structure that is 350 square feet. Then that structure will not be legally recognized as a H-O-E-R-C in that particular jurisdiction. It might be called something else. Could be called a shed or playhouse or studio or whatever you want to call it. If it's, and we're talking about the same model of building, the same design of building, but instead of being 480 square feet, it's 380 square feet or 350 square feet. So anyway, so once you put a building or a dwelling and permanently attached to the land via the foundation, then you have real estate. Now, with real estate, and we're talking about in terms of the United States only in this example, in the United States, when you permanently affix let's say a private dwelling onto the land, it is now called real estate, and now you no longer it's no longer yours by 100%. You have a senior partner and a junior partner. Your senior partner in this venture, which is now called real estate, is the local taxing authority. And why are they the senior partners? Because, number one, they determine what is the value of your property that will meet what their goals or their agenda. Number two, they're going to assess property taxes based on what they say the property is worth. It doesn't matter if you hire a personal appraiser. They go by what their appraiser says. Based on their tax assessment, they're going to send you a tax bill. And if you don't pay that tax bill within a certain amount of time, they will essentially put your senior partner in this real estate, what we call real estate. Well, although you built it and you don't own anything on it, your senior de facto partner, the local tax authority, can put that property up for tax sale and sell it. The new people will boot you out, and then you got to start all over again. In real estate, there are two partners. The de facto senior partner is the local tax authority. You're the junior partner. If you don't pay the municipal water bill, provided you take municipal water, you don't pay it, they can do the same thing to you. So in real estate, at least what we're talking about in the United States, you really don't own, once you permanently attach to the land, you no longer own that property, that housing part. Once you put the housing component on the land and it becomes real estate, you no longer own it 100%. All right. Now, a mobile home, that's something that is not permanently attached to the ground in most cases. A mobile home that is, or any dwelling that is not permanently attached to the ground, it could be on skids, it could be on wheels, could be on, as long as it's not permanently attached to the house, that particular housing unit that you own 100% and is private and it will not be taxed or assessed and or taxed by the local tax authority, that's housing. It could be a mobile house or a mobile home, as most people call it. It could be an RV. It could be a dog house, a doll house, a she shed, a he shed, man cave. But it's not real estate. They're not going to send you a tax bill on it. Now, once again, check your local authorities. But that's so you want housing. At least I do. You want housing over real estate. And that's one of the reasons why. And then also, if you want to make, like, for instance, in a lot of your largest jurisdictions, and this varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, maybe you want to put new windows in. Then you would have, in some jurisdictions, and you want to install them yourself because, in your mind, you think you own this property at 100% outright, private. No, because if you did, you wouldn't have to get a permit. And a root word of permit, if we break down the etymology of it, is permission. So you don't own anything 100% if you have to go get permission in the form of a permit to put in a window, doors, get a new roof on it, you know, put a shed on it. Now, once again, this varies from county to county, from city to city. But that's why I call it fake estate. If you want to own a dwelling 100% outright, privately owned, go get yourself a mobile home or buy a tiny house on wheels or build a tiny house on skids or build yourself a tree house, a man cave, a she shed. That's what I advise you to do. And it's interesting that most people, well, let me here's the interesting part. But some of you might say, but I have a deed. Well, all a deed is a deed is a written record of the transactions of that particular piece of real estate. When was it bought and sold, and the names of the people that were involved with it is just a record. You know, if a mortgage was on it, you know, that type of information. It's just a record, a documentation of transactions. That's what a deed is. So, fake estate, I think, is a more appropriate term than real estate. Because most people are clueless, particularly when they paid off the house. And no, as long as you, for instance, when you go to McDonald's and buy a Big Mac or whatever, you own that burger, a milkshake. There's no taxation on it. Okay. Further taxation on what you originally, since you bought it, the burger. If you go to Walmart or any place and buy you a pair of pants or a shirt or a set of, you know, that's yours outright. There's no taxing authority that says, well, if you don't pay, here's a yearly bill, and now this shirt or this pair of shoes is worth this amount of money, and then they come back. If you don't pay that money, they come back and they sell your shirt and somebody repossesses. No. Those are examples of really owning something. But if you get a bill every year on property taxes that you have to pay or tax, you don't own it. You don't own it. So think about that. Now, some of you might be saying, you know, but I've got all this equity. Well, you know what? Equity is really to the benefit of the local taxing authority and the bank, should you ever refinance or sell, or the taxing authorities, should you sell as well. With housing that you probably own, tiny house, house on skids, tree house, mobile home, you're not going to get any equity with those. But what you do get is, A, if you live in it, debt-free living, non-assessment, tax assessment on it, and if you ever rent it out, cash flow. So tell me something. Would you like to have a house with $500,000 worth of equity, or would you like to own a bunch of mobile homes or tiny houses or whatever you want to call them, barns or whatever, that gives you $500,000 a month or $500,000 a year cash flow? No equity, but cash flow. Give me the cash flow. That's just me. Let's see. Amish, Mennonite, and Hutterites. These communities typically build their own. They don't get into the mortgage game, the institutional mortgage game. For the most part, they build their own, using social capital, their houses, their barns, and that, you know, their buildings, their housing. And, you know, some of it does become real estate. A lot of it does become real estate. But they typically build in rural areas. In some of those areas, they form their own towns and villages. And there is taxation once that what they build becomes real estate. But due to the fact of where they build, and we're going to do a podcast on this later this week, on the value of living in and building in an unincorporated, you want the maximum amount of freedom in the United States and Canada or anywhere in the world, build, get some land and then build in an unincorporated area. They're also called unorganized areas where there's no formal government. There are areas like that here in the United States as well as Canada and probably some other countries around the world. And we'll go through that by the end of the week. Some of the places that you might want to look. Let me see. And, you can get a clue now. If you go online and put in Amish communities map or Mennonite communities map or Hutterite maps where they have communities, then you get a good idea of, where you can buy some land at reasonable prices and have a greater amount of freedom and real home ownership, not fake estate, but real real estate instead of fake estate. And consumers, Mennonite, Hutterites, and Amish, they think like real house owners because they build theirs for the most part. Whereas most people in Western countries, I'm going to buy a house. Start hanging around people that don't buy houses. They rent, they build houses and go with that. Okay, wait a minute. Somebody is trying to reach me, so let's, see if I can reach him on another number. Okay.
So there's a lot going on with our timber supply. If you watched my video on our timber supply shortage and timber prices, you probably got the idea that there's a lot more going on right now with our timber shortage than just the coronavirus. The coronavirus definitely exacerbated an existing issue, but this issue is something that's been around longer than the coronavirus has, and it's something that we actually knew about going back into late 2019, and legislators already started thinking of ways to try and avert a timber shortage. But ultimately, when it comes to the fundamental reason, if you watch that video, I get down to the fundamental reason of what's going on with our timber supply. The reality is that timber prices are going up and they're going to stay up for the foreseeable future, which is going to impact the cost of new homes. That's also going to drive up the price of existing homes because people aren't going to be able to afford to buy brand new, so they're going to start buying more existing homes and fixing them up. Something that I've been trying to do is prepare my family and myself for a supply glut like this in timber. And the way that you do that is you figure out ways to create your own timber. So I wanted to talk to you guys about tools that you would need during a timber supply collapse. Timber is something that we use for more than just building homes. We use it for furniture. We use it for all sorts of projects around the ranch. We're always in need of timber. We always need lumber. So on this side of this building that I'm building, I've actually designed this to be kind of a lumber working area. So over here I'm going to have, you see these boxes on the side, those are mounting brackets for electrical boxes. So after I put on my siding, I'll have electrical outlets here. You'll see a 2x12 up top, that's a ledger board to mount another roof coming out the side of the building. That roof is going to run out a good 12, maybe even 16 feet, I haven't decided, feet away from the bay. And then I'm going to go ahead and have kind of an open side towards the house and towards our driveway, and then block it off where it faces the road. And this
Okay, I had to take that call. And let me put this out there now, because I just found out about this about an hour and a half ago. There is a movie that is being released. Ben Affleck, is the primary producer or director. Ben Affleck, Damon, what's his name? Matt Damon, Viola Davis are in it. It's called Air. I recommend people check out the trailer on YouTube, and it's about basically how Jordans came into being. And there's a couple people. I'm trying to get an interview with one of the people. It's Chris Tucker, the actor, is playing the role of a guy named Howard White. And I'm trying to get Howard White on here to do an interview, but he's a basketball shoe executive. But anyway, so that's why I had to take that call. But anyway, check out the trailer on YouTube. Anyway, so back to what I was talking about earlier, Fake Estate, F-A-K-E Estate. So it, like I say, if you have real estate, and a lot of people have real estate, you really don't own it 100%. You have some legal rights to it. You can live in it, you know, depending on the jurisdiction. In some jurisdictions, if you want to rent it, for instance, I'll give you a good example, Airbnb. I have a house in Washington, D.C. I'm in Florida right now. I cannot rent that house out as an Airbnb because that is not my homestead. It's not my homestead. So my senior de facto partner has a law that says in Washington, D.C. proper, I cannot rent that property out as an Airbnb unless I live in it as a homestead. Now, if I move into it as a homestead, then I can legally rent it out as an Airbnb, but for no more than 90 days out of the year. Now, I'm in Florida right now, and I can live on Pluto and rent this house out as an Airbnb 365 days out of the year. Real estate or fake estate, and even how people can get wealthy to a high degree, in my opinion, is based a lot on geography. In certain places, you can get wealthy, or it's easier to get wealthy in others. And we'll go through this on a biblical way, not a religious way, because that's why I did a couple of podcasts called Your Promised Land Ain't in Egypt. Egypt and Pharaoh represents big government. That's my interpretation of it. I'm going from the Exodus book in the Old Testament of the Bible. Pharaoh represents big government. Egypt represents a community that's heavily regulated and on the grid. There's certain things you can do and certain things you can't do. The less you can do, that makes you into a slave. Now, the promised land is where you can do what you want to do to a very high degree. Some of it's 100%, some of it might be 80 or 90%, but in your promised land, you got a lot more freedom. Because when the Israelites, when the Hebrew slaves left Egypt and crossed their Red Sea into their own promised land, they had to develop that land. But we'll say that for another day. So, on fake estate, I recommend people look at it. You know what? If you're in New York City, you know, where a room, man, not a studio apartment, but a room, it costs you $700 to $1,000 a month. And not a big room either. It might, and New York City would be my example of a modern-day Egypt. And their local tax authority in New York City, Manhattan, Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, Staten Island, is the local tax authority. So you might want it. So if you're struggling in New York City, you might want to consider moving to somewhere in New York State. Whereas for less money, I'll give an example. I bought a house in Buffalo, New York some years ago for $700. Whole house. Rooms in New York City cost more than that. So what are you going, you know, do you stay in Egypt or on the grid in New York City? Now, granted, now Buffalo's about 7 hours away by car. But I'm just saying. So now with people telecommuting, okay, I'd rather live in Niagara Falls, New York, Buffalo, New York, or Rochester, New York, and those are urban cities in New York State. If you move to the rural areas of New York State, you know, it gets better than that. Instead of having a house, now you can get something with an acre or 2 acres or 3 acres of land on it. Same money. And you have more property rights. Once again, we'll get into all of that another day. Because once again, you won't find your promised land in Egypt. For most people starting out, you know, they move to, they all, you know, I'm in New York, I'm going to make it here, I'm in Chicago, I'm going to make it here, I'm in Seattle, Washington, or Miami, or Orlando. No. Matter of fact, my message, and I'm a black person, my message to black Americans, particularly black men, you don't want to live in Chicago. Drive 30, I would even suggest 45 minutes to 60 minutes. Give yourself a 60-mile radius, be it Chicago, Los Angeles, San Diego, Seattle, San Francisco, Boston, D.C., Orlando, Miami, Houston, Texas, San Antonio, Texas, Dallas, Texas, Oklahoma City, wherever there's a big population city, a big urban area, my suggestion is bare minimum, look, 60 miles, a 60-mile radius. Some of you might be able to get away with a 20-minute radius. But to play it safe, look at everything within a 60-mile radius of where you're at. Now, if you really want to bargain hunt, give yourself a 60 miles, 200-mile radius. And then for the really ambitious, that if you really want to see prices drop, don't put a limit on it. I live in Florida. I found 10 acres of land in Texas for $2,000. That's it. Purchase price, property taxes, everything that the government needed, recording fees, 10 acres. So what, I have to fly to it? But I don't have to fly every day. But, you know, it's a subjective thing, so to each his own. But a lot of people that, you know what, had George Floyd, now this is just my personal opinion, had George Floyd not lived in Minnesota, but lived in, matter of fact, let's do it now. Oh, Okay. George Floyd lived in Minneapolis. Let's look at the population of Minneapolis. Let's see. Minneapolis. Okay, what's the population of Minneapolis? 425,366. Now, I'm just speculating here. I don't have a crystal ball, and I can't bring George Floyd back. But let's say, let's look in our search engines. Least populated least populous town in Minnesota. Okay. There is Funkley, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, population 18. Lewisburg, Minnesota, population 31. Hazel Run, Minnesota, population 55. Warburg, Minnesota, 170 people. There's a lot of towns here, so I'm not going to name them all. Clearbrook, Minnesota, population 460. Now, let me name these towns. Clearbrook, all of them in Minnesota. Aiken, Shorewood, Hokish, 550 people. Floodwood, Minnesota, 520 people. Lauderdale, Minnesota, 2,300 people. St. Louis Park, Minnesota, 50,000 people. Woodbury, Minnesota, 75 people. Forreston, Minnesota, 560 people. Belchester, Minnesota, 180 people. Dorvay, Minnesota, 58 people. Vining, Minnesota, 62 people. McGrath, Minnesota. Let's look at Graff, Minnesota. Graff, Minnesota, a town of McGrath. The town of McGrath is located in Aiken County. Let's take a closer look at this. Let's go. McGrath, Minnesota. Okay. McGrath, Minnesota, and you got, this is online. We can all look it up. McGrath, Minnesota is a city in Aiken County, Minnesota. Population was 80 in the 2010 census. They now put it at 41 people. Okay. Not to say nothing negative happens in McGrath. But in a town like McGrath, typically everybody knows everybody. Most of these stories that we hear about people, these homicides, these high-profile homicides, particularly of African-American men, they're coming, and it happens to white folks, too. Happens in densely populated areas because, in my opinion, people are not supposed, look at nature. We're not supposed to be living on top of each other like that and that close to each other. All right, now let's go to Aiken County, Minnesota. Okay, Aiken County, Minnesota has a total population of the whole county of 15,697 people. In my opinion, I'm just purely speculating because I cannot bring George Floyd back. I can't rewind history. I don't have a time machine or nothing like that. But in my opinion, George Floyd, Trayvon Martin, Mike Gardner, Mike Brown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, would probably be alive today if they lived in an area that had dramatically less people. Now, you need the mindset and the skill set to live in some of these places. Because in a lot of these places, you have people that are independent. They're off-the-grid people. They don't need a subway. There's no bus line in these areas. A lot of these people that live in these areas grow their own food. And it's significant that don't. Some of these people might live 15 to 20 minutes away from a larger city, where they can go to Walmart, go to McDonald's, go bowling, go to a movie theater, whatever they want to do. But I'm just saying, when was the last time, if ever, you heard of something happening, and crime does happen in rural America, people. It does happen. We did a piece last week on this couple out in Colorado, El Paso County, Texas. El Paso County, Minnesota. Which, now, if I were them, and I'm not, I start off with an Obama Bear Summit or Apple Pie Summit or a Coffee Summit or a Hot Chocolate Summit. I come first from the get-go. I don't wait till shit hits the fan. And I believe right now, if those two property owners would come together and sit down and respectfully sit down and listen to each other, there's been a lot of hurt there. Animals have been killed and some more. But all that started over a property line dispute. But hold, that's a whole nother podcast. We'll cover more of that later. And we'll give you an update on that later as well. But anyway, getting back to McGrath County, Minnesota, there's a lot of counties like Aiken County, Minnesota, McGrath, the town of 51 people. You know, McGrath County, and if you look on Wikipedia and then look at the map, it's a big county. Now, let's look at the communities in there. You've got 6 cities in McGrath County. Then you have quite a number of townships. Okay, let's look at Hill City. Hill City has a population of 613. Every one of those townships and cities that are in McGrath County, Minnesota, you don't hear about them on the national news. Why? Because the whole county doesn't have that mindset. People are not living on top of each other. Go to those places and you'll meet people that know the distinctions between real estate and fake estate. I'm just saying. Might be a good place to look. Okay. So, so you got to know where to look. Go to places like, I haven't even set foot in the state of Minnesota yet. But trust me, when I do go, one of the first places I'm going to go is this Aiken County, Minnesota. Because they got a real low population countywide of a little bit over 15,000 people. It's a very spacious county. And, like I said, I'm just speculating. He's gone now. But typically why we hear about Chicago all the time? You got over 3 million people living in the close area. What do you hear about crime out of New York and Miami, Dallas, Los Angeles? A lot of people in the small, I call it cabin fever. Let's look at, Tamarack, Minnesota has a population of 62 people. 62. Remember the TV show, The Andy Griffith Show? One of the reasons why, and this is just my opinion, one of the reasons why that TV show was so popular is because Mayberry, their real life Mayberry, there are more Mayberries in the United States than New York City's or Los Angeles' or Chicago's. I don't know what the population of the make-believe town of Mayberry was, but there's a bunch of shares out there friendly, just like the Andy Griffith character or Andy Taylor character on, you know, Andy Griffith Show in Mayberry. Now, you also have, you know, the character that was played by Don Knotts, Marnie Fife. There's a bunch of them out there, too. Okay. But in a town like Mayberry, to get on the good side of, and particularly the Marnie Fife's of the world, because the Marnie Fife's of the world, they do exist. You got to build social capital. You have to go in building. So don't wait for them to come to you. You go to them. Tamarack, Minnesota, I believe if George Floyd was in Tamarack, Minnesota, population 62, more than likely he could have been drinking buddies or fishing buddies with the law enforcement of that time. I'm just speculating. I'm just theorizing. I buy in small places, and I get to know the powers that be from the get-go. Matter of fact, I rely on the powers that be from the get-go to say, you know, anybody who might want to sell me a piece of land or a house. That's how I do it. I go in seeking out who the authorities are. Now, authorities, they might not have a sheriff or law enforcement in that particular town. It might be a mayor. It might be a city council member, some type of official elected government official. That's one of the reasons why I use this platform. We have, and hopefully he'll be in tomorrow, I have an interview lined up with a mayor of a black township tomorrow. And I've interviewed at least three black mayors, of three township mayors on this podcast before. So tomorrow we have, hopefully, because I talked with him last week, and I sent him an email yesterday and Sunday. I'm going to send him another one today with a phone call. So if we can't get him on for sure tomorrow, he might recommend another mayor that might be available at, you know, the time that we're on tomorrow. And we're going to talk about a whole bunch of little towns tomorrow. But that's my theory. If George Floyd had been in Tamarack, Minnesota, McGrath, Minnesota, he might be alive today. Let's go to another town in Minnesota. Now, let's go to, because these are, I just named cities. Let's go to Palisade, in Minnesota. Palisade has a population of 162 people. I don't catch all of the news, but I haven't heard of Palisade, Minnesota making the news. Let's see, particularly when it comes to spree shootings, mass shootings, and racial inharmony and violence. I haven't heard it. It could happen. I just haven't heard it. Okay, we're still in Minnesota. Let's go to the townships now. Let's go to Farm Island Township in Minnesota. They have a population of 1,099 people. Haven't heard anything out of that place. Let's go to Kimberly Township in Minnesota. They have a population of 195 people. This county in Minnesota, and this is just one of several counties in Minnesota, is what I call the real United States of America. I believe El Paso County, Colorado, is a part of the real United States of America. For first thing, you know, part of that debacle out there is, you know, they were able to buy 1,000 acres of land. You're not going to do that in Denver, Colorado. But in El Paso County, Colorado, you can do that. But, like, once again, there's a social capital and there's a political capital part of it. And once again, a real life, in my opinion, out of the 3,000-plus counties or county equivalents in the United States, there are more Mayberries than cities that have a lot of civic problems with violence and crime and racial this and racial that. The real United States, where you can find the real Mayberries, they exist in abundance, but you have to know where to look. Bentonville, Arkansas, that's where Walmart got started. Still a small town. Not real stuff to me. Bad things do happen in small places now. But I'm just saying, because I'm in the statistics, your chance of success, happiness, and prosperity, in my opinion, and I'm just one person, are better for you in the smaller places. Now, there are some benefits to going on the grid because, like I say, if you want to catch a whale, you need to get into the proper boat and head towards the North Atlantic, and then you can catch whales. You're not going to catch a whale in the pond. So if you want to catch on an income level, if you want to catch some whales, then you go to the Minnesotas. But then you know how to swim in those big places. There's certain things you can do in McGrath, Minnesota, that you're not going to get away with in a St. Paul or Minneapolis, Minnesota. Barney Fife and Sheriff Andy Taylor, they don't live in nor do they work in Minneapolis, Minnesota, or St. Paul, Minnesota, or Chicago, or New York, or D.C., or Orlando, or Los Angeles. They don't exist in those places. But they do exist in many places, in hundreds if not thousands of places across the United States. There are over 41,000 zip codes in the United States. And I would say most of them, you can find a Mayberry zip code. Eighty-six percent of the population in the United States only occupies 3% of the available landmass. Mayberry is the 97% of the landmass that is rural. And that's why Hee Haw, the Andy Griffith Show, even Roseanne, with Roseanne Barr, Grace Under Fire, those shows were popular because they reflect the real United States of America. At least that's the way I see it. But I'm just one person out of 8 billion. There are people that have. And, you know, let's go with going back to the Houdinites, the Mennonites, and the Amish. Look at their maps. You don't see no Amish setting up shop in New York City, L.A. Put out the top 100 cities in the United States. Amish don't roll in those places. Mennonites don't roll in those places. They go to places where they have the maximum amount of freedom with the least amount of government intervention and the least amount of toxic people. Okay, that's my ranting for today. Let's see. Matter of fact, hold on. Before we go to open the phone lines here, let's see, how many counties, number of counties, in Minnesota. Okay, okay, there are 87 counties in Minnesota. All right, now, let's see, urban to rural ratio counties in Minnesota. I said, I'm starting to do my research already before I step in the state. I know people there already. Okay, rural, let's see. All right, 73% population of the state of Minnesota they live in urban areas of the state of Minnesota. That would be Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, just off the top of my head. Percent of Minnesota urban, let's see, percent of, let's see. I'm trying to get an exact ratio for you. Urban, rural, okay, let me look at this. All right, so you got the majority of people out of 87 counties now. 87% of the population of the state of Minnesota primarily live in three cities, or three metro areas, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and, well, they're twin cities, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and Duluth. Out of 87 counties. All right, that's just three. Okay, let me see if I get. Oh, excuse me, 73.3% of the population live, and then 25.7% of the population live rural. I'm trying to get. All right, let me do it this way. Number of rural counties, counties, that's what I want. Man, come on. All right. Rural counties in Minnesota. Okay. I think if I'm ready, I'm trying to get, wait a minute, let's see. I don't want the number of people that live in. I want how many. Okay, well, let me. I'm trying to get out of 87 counties. All right, a surprising number of U.S. counties have 100% rural, or 100% rural in land, in fact. There are 702 100% rural counties in the United States. Okay, that's out of 3,000. Let's see, counties, let me break it down this way. We're going with United States based on this, all right. coming in at number 50. Houston County, but they don't say, is this for, okay. Houston County, which this is not in Texas, is 99% rural. I wish they would, they need to put the state on this. Wait a minute. Oh, this must be Minnesota. Excuse me. Houston County, Minnesota. So out of the 87 counties in Minnesota, 50 of them are rural. I'm putting this out here because I don't want another George Floyd to happen. All right. Houston County, Minnesota is 99.2% rural. Going to number 49. Mille Lacs County, and that's M-I-L-L-E, Mille Lacs, L-A-C, S County, Minnesota, is 99.3% rural. It's not even 1% urban. Okay. Which means you're going to need a certain set of social skills. Think Mayberry. Think Mayberry. That's where Sheriff Taylor is. But that's where Barney Fife is. But if you're friends with Barney, like Goober and Gomer and Aunt B and Otis the Drunk, you're good. This is some real shit in 2023. Okay. Meeker County, Minnesota, coming in at number 40. And once again, Minnesota's got 87 counties. All right, it's 99.3%. Let me speed this up. Nobles County is 99.3% more. Chippewa County, coming at number 6, is 99.3% rural. Morrison County is 45, which is the 45th most rural county in Minnesota. It's 99.3%. Let me go all the way because, man, I'll be here all day talking about this. Hurry, hold on. Let me see. Before I go to the phone lines here. Okay. Jesus. Wait a minute. 25. Pine County, Florida. No, excuse me. Pine County, Minnesota, is 99.9% rural. There are 23 more counties that are more rural than that. Out of 80s, if you're a black man, and I'm a black man, like I said, I got friends in Minnesota. They live in the Minneapolis. Trust me, I'm going to visit. There's a certain way I'm going to roll there. But I'm going to these counties like Pine County, 99% rural. Okay, let me see. I'm trying to get to the top three. All right. Number 10, we're still in Minnesota. Red Lake County, Minnesota, is the 10th most rural county, and it's 100% rural. Now, in places like this, you'll meet people that live off the grid. In places like this, you have people that have no or very low utility bills. In places like this, you might run across some Amish and Mennonite people, and maybe some Herdonite people. In places like this, people have, they might not have municipal water bills. You got plenty of water, but they have a well. In places like this, if there's any public schooling, and they do have public schooling, they also have a through their social contract, you know, they help, a lot of these people help each other build homes, and they don't have mortgages on them. Let's see, we already went through Akin County. Okay, we're into Traverse County. I'm going to name off the top five. Traverse County, Minnesota is 100% rural. Haven't heard nothing jump. Now, out of Minnesota, we've had the George Floyd case, and it was a white woman originally from Australia. She was killed by a black cop in Minnesota, in Minneapolis or St. Paul. And then one of those, there's another black dude that got killed by the police. All in, we're talking about Minneapolis, the Minneapolis metro, Minneapolis St. Paul metro area. I haven't heard nothing coming out of Traverse County, Minnesota. It's 100% rural. Number four, most rural county in Minnesota, Marshall County, Minnesota, it's 100% rural. These are places of what I call the real United States of America. Number three, Kitchen County, Minnesota, it's 100% rural. Cook County, Minnesota, not Cook County, Illinois, Cook County, Minnesota, is 100% rural. And coming in at number one, most rural county in the state of Minnesota, Lake of the Woods County, Minnesota, 100% rural. The population of the density, the population of density in this county is 2.9 people. This is rounded up to three. Three people per square mile. In that whole county, they have less than 4,000 people. You can march and you can protest. You can vote people in and out of office in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and St. Paul. If you want to see the best political solution and the best way to stay alive, black man, brown man, or any man or woman, go to a rural county. A rural county is perfect? No. Does crime happen in rural counties? Yes. But a lot of crimes that happen besides the Hatfield and McCoy shit happen, or essentially, it's a lot of vandalism. And in some cases, like what's happening in El Paso County, Colorado, you know, they killed some animals, they poured some animals. That's the way they roll out there. But the way they roll is, and I'm not saying it's right, this is the way they roll. They roll away with, if nothing can't be resolved by talking, a lot of people don't even try to talk first. Then they'll send a message by killing some of your farm animals or whatever. But a lot is resolved because culturally and rurally, and like I said, I want to get this couple on from El Paso County, Colorado, because I want to find out their background. Where did they live before they came to El Paso County, Colorado? All right, that's my rant on that. And I think what we'll do at least once a week, we're going to take a look at and do some note comparisons. You know, where's the latest news out of? What county did that happen in? Versus in the same state, let's take a look at another county in the same state, and let's compare notes on what's happening there with crime. Because, like I said, there's crime everywhere. But statistically speaking, you're better off in a smaller, less densely populated area where, you know, you have the real United States of America. I mean, in some places you have a volunteer fire department. And you might have a volunteer, community protection department or police department or whatever, we're going to get into that. Anyway. Okay, I done ran my mouth for the last hour or so, so let me. If you guys want to chime in on any of it, but anyway, that we started with fake estate versus real estate. And that's my take on that. All right, so, okay. All right, we had some people in the studio, but I think they're gone. So, all right, we're going to, unless somebody presses one, we're going to, okay. What I'm looking for, oh, doggone it. Okay. All right, well, if you're out there listening, press one. If not, we're going to end it for today. Doggone, I'm trying to find. Okay. Hey, wait a minute. Okay, well, we're going to wrap it up for today. Tomorrow, hopefully, we'll have our guest in. Everyone have a good rest of the day.